pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Next is public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda.
Okay.
Good morning, Laura Solis of Haines.
I'm sorry, Laura.
Probably not on.
Hey, I'm green now. Okay. Laura Solson Ames. I was wondering if on the consent agenda you could pull out for a little bit further information and discussion the proposed retention bonus programs for community life. I'm specifically interested if any projections have been done about how much this could be costing financially. Thank you.
Next is consideration of minutes from 9:23. I'll move approval.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any additions or corrections? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval as submitted.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the personnel action. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those have been approved. Under consent agenda, we're going to move item number five to additional items number five. There's a resolution 1520, that is resolution 1526, excuse me, utility permits. We need to add our 1517, we need to add a road closure 1517. And Loris asked about the retention bonus for the community life non-union employees, and I would assume both union and non-union, Loris?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Move approval of the consent agenda with noted changes.
Second.
We've got a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda with the noted changes. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Why don't you come back up, Loris, if you had a question on these specifically.
I noted that it is a graduated scale, and no plans have been created firmly yet about exactly we know how many employees will or will not be retained throughout the entire process. So I understand it's an exact science. In addition, I know that the RFP that is out to the service agencies right now do call possibly for an early transition or takeover starting in January of 2015. I was just interested if anyone had an opportunity to run some models about the cost, especially since both of those agreements do note at the bottom that the agreements are subject to finding funds. And I know there's a couple different sources maybe for funds, but I was just wondering if those projections had been done. If so, if someone could share them. Thank you.
I don't have the total overall in front of me.
Why don't you just maybe comment on the process that you guys you used with Alyssa, and while we can't divulge the finer details of the discussion with the bargaining unit, I believe there was a because we haven't received a word back from where they are, but just give a little overview of maybe the process that was used to get us to this point.
Sure. Well, both the agreements are pretty much the same. One's for non-union employee, and the other one is for bargaining unit or union employees. And in order to try to retain staff so we can keep our operations at a level where we need to have them in the community life program, it was agreed that all employees that are on board as of November 1st would receive a 10% bonus, or 10% of their actual wages for the months of November and December, 20% for January, February, and March, and then 30% for April, May, and June. And that would be the percentage is based on their hours worked. Doesn't include sick time or vacation time or paid time off. It's strictly strictly their hours worked. And this was reached here a week or a week and a half ago in a session with the AFSCME bargaining unit for the community life program. And Rick, if you'll remind me and let everybody know what we thought the overall projected total would be for the
Sure, it's 180% of total payroll if we retain 100% of our employees between now and June. But I think it's really, really important that we clarify a couple things. And one is that this bonus structure is intended completely as a mechanism to retain staff so that we can achieve our stated goal of continuing to provide services throughout the transition. The hard part with the transition all along, several hard parts, but one of the things with employee retention that I've seen is if you're an employee of CLP and you know that as of June 30, 2015, that position is going to go away. Now, maybe you can transition into whoever is now providing service, but it would seem to me that the responsible thing to do as an individual would be see what your options are for employment, see what you can find and go. And all we're trying to do here is put a reward for our employees that stay with us till the very end, either the end of CLP or the end of their program that they service in CLP, and make sure that there's something there so that we can retain staff. We don't know whether we're going to be able to retain staff in this.
Right.
I think it's simply a way to do it. And so what a staff member who works 40 hours a week between November 1st and June 30th, all the way through, would then receive an additional check that is 180%, so almost double their regular monthly wage. So if you know that our wage in July of 2014 was roughly $220,000, is Mark Lee in here? It's roughly $220,000, and you say 180% of that, you're $350,000, $360,000, just off the top of my head, is the maximum amount this would cost. The reality is it's not going to cost that much because we aren't going to be fully staffed all the way through. We've just got to make sure that we're staffed to a level that allows us to continue to provide the services.
Right.
At the end of the day, this is a regional issue. This is our suggestion of how it would go to get it done. I think it's in the region's best interest, Wayne, to continue to provide services through CLP. Clearly, it's in our best interest. It's what we've committed to. I'm really appreciative, Paul, to you and Jessica and Alyssa for working out the details of this deal. And I think we've put together a program that has a very legitimate hope of achieving what we want it to achieve.
And it's important to note that a large number of these employees, especially in the bargaining unit, are direct care workers. They work in the group homes, and they work in the supported living apartments. And we have to have those staff members in place in order to continue the operation. If we don't have the direct care workers, then we're not going to be able to continue our operation. So that's.
And just based on preliminary discussions with members of the governance exec group, made up of CPCs and so forth, that bring it recommendations to the governing board, they are very much aware of the process that we've gone through. Deb being our key spokesperson there, and I think I have a great deal of confidence that we will gain a lot of support as we try to move forward, because it was identified in the transition, in the report from Parker Denison and so forth, that there may be some things that we needed to put in place as we move forward. And so this should not be a surprise even to the governing board. And I think the recommendations that we are putting forth now has truly been looked at in terms of how we can maintain those services and employees that remain with us. And I just think it's the right thing to do. So I feel very confident that we will be able to meet our stated goal of providing services.
With that, we would need to take action on these two items.
Yeah, and I'll make the motion to approve both of these items. I'll stop there.
Yeah, and a second.
Yeah, and I just want to underscore, Wayne, for the last year and a half, I mean, you have worn dual hats. You're a member of the Board of Supervisors, but also a member of the Regional Board. But this board has worked really, really hard to have a great relationship with the Regional Board and to inform them every step of the way of what we were thinking up to and including the handoff to when the region took over. And since then, I've felt it's been reciprocated. The region has really worked hard to get our input, and I view this as another step along those lines. These are Story County employees, so they fall under our purview.
Right.
But the funding, and I'll just remind you guys, we've got about $5 million in mental health funding that's now part of the region. We also have, and Michelle is looking at you, because I think it's $800,000 roughly in cost report settlements that we may have coming back in. She's nodding her head yes, so I'm at least
right.
Close on the number. So an additional $800,000. So when you look at upwards of a $300,000 to $350,000 bill, it's easy to see where that funding will come from.
Exactly. Right. Thank you. Well stated.
So we have a motion and a second to approve those two items, the acknowledgement of the action of the chair in signing the agreement with the union employees and the actual bonus, retention bonus for the non-union employees.
I will second the motion, both of those for
okay,
both.
Well, Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot, aye. Those two items have been approved. That would take us to additional items.
Now,
Well, we've pulled it, but we've actually moved it down
okay.
to
and additional items. Help me now. Did we take the vote on the other items? We did.
We've moved that down to.
And you amended the 15, the utility permits
yep.
and so forth.
Yep.
Okay, great.
We're covered.
Okay.
Next is the opening bid for the trail resurfacing to portions of the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail and the Prairie Rail Trail. Mike Cox.
Hi, Mike.
Morning.
How you doing?
Good. Very good. Well, as you know, this is a rebid of a project to do some trail resurfacing, do some flood repairs on both the Heart of Iowa Nature Trail and the Prairie Rail Trail. So we've got two bids. First bid is from Construct Incorporated. Their bid bond is complete and enclosed. And their bid amount is $111,342.00. So 111342.00. Yep, sorry, did you get that?
Mm-hmm.
The next bid is from Elder Corporation. The bid bond is complete. And the bid is $133,760 and no cents. So 133,760.00. And those are all the bids.
Okay, so the process, Mike, here, this is just the opening of them here. Are you planning to come back at a later time with a recommendation to award? And will this need to go back before the Conservation Board prior to us taking action?
Yep, so I'll review bids and then make a recommendation to the Conservation Board, who in turn will make a recommendation to the supervisors at next week's meeting. Okay. The Conservation Board has a meeting next Monday evening.
Okay.
So,
can you remind us what the FEMA amount, what they thought it was going to cost?
The FEMA amount was $97,911.
$97,911.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Mm-hmm. The next is discussion and consideration of funding for the 2014 Urban Renewal Area Project applications. We're back.
I just start while she's pulling it up, complimenting Leanne. She's done a nice job running us through this process. This is the third week in a row that we've had this on our agenda. I think there's been ample time to really, really vet these projects. Today is decision day, and I assume you're ready now.
I am ready. Just a couple slides to help you through the process, and then for your benefit as well, I do have, if you'll recall, the past 2 weeks I've had all the projects up here. I do have those on the slide presentation as well, but I'm not going to go through those. Today is, as Rick said, really the decision-making. Past 2 weeks and weeks prior, you've been reviewing and receiving information from the communities. Today, the process for discussion and consideration is really threefold. One, I think you should start off by the discussion on how you want to fund these. And then move into what projects to approve, and then go from there, specifically for those projects, what amounts to fund. Starting with that funding discussion, that's an important one to start with, so that the board has an opportunity to decide up front, do you want to go with what funds are available, which is about $235,185 odd cents, or do you want to borrow and incur debt? That's important to know for staff up front, so that we can begin the process to go through the legal mechanisms needed to incur that debt prior to December 1st. But again, the amount available is $235,000. Then following that, I would recommend, again, you go into the projects, and as I stated, I do have all those in summary as well. I'll be glad to answer any questions you've had over the past couple weeks.
I think Leanne's got us started on exactly the right direction. I think the first decision the three of us better make is, do we want to borrow money for any of these projects right here? We've got $235,000 roughly available in the fund as we put forward our policies and procedures. Clearly, we can go above that if we decide we want to bond for it. I'll start the ball rolling. I'm really appreciative of all of these projects. I don't see anything here that triggers to the level of assuming debt for the county, and so I come down squarely in favor of keeping our award amount $235,000 or under and not doing any bonding this year.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate Mr. Sanders' comment, and when I put down several different scenarios, and we'll probably take a look at that, but the scenarios that I was looking at was trying to figure out how, if we felt that all or a certain number of them were all worthy of consideration, what would be the dollar amount. And even though I made what I considered to be some couple scenarios and some adjustments, it was all with the understanding that it would be based upon the amount fund balance that is currently there and not to basically exceed that. However, when all was said and done, the one scenario that I ended up with that will be talked about probably later is when we start talking about numbers. I was slightly almost $17,000 over that amount. And so the question to me would be, is if it's within that range, would we still have to bond, or is there another mechanism through any fund balance in the economic development pool of dollars that we as a board could decide to make up the difference if we so wanted to? I know this is a little different. We haven't thought about it in those terms, but when you look at projects, one way of doing it would be to reduce the amounts based on the ones that we select to move forward, and then look to see later whether there is an additional funding mechanism if we wanted to apply it at a later time.
Yeah, and Wayne, I think you make a great point, and I think you're 100% right. I would just encourage us to make sure that we view that squarely as two different projects.
Exactly.
So what we're talking about here today is TIF funding, and if we're not going to bond any, then we're going to stay at $235,000 or under today. Now, that said, Wayne, in the last couple years, we've done micro kind of projects. We've done some additional things with economic development, and there's nothing to say that we couldn't take one of the projects that are on here that either is not funded today or is only partially funded today and add to that, much as you say, through the economic development stream, but not using TIF dollars.
Right.
But I would encourage us to keep that. That's another conversation for another day if we are going to do any of that. And today, in my mind, if we're going to stay at $235,000 or under, it should be about that.
Right, right. No, it was just well stated. It just, I think we're on the same page. It was just the process that we would probably need to use if we were going to consider. And I just wanted it for this record to lay that out as a thought process that I was having as we begin to move forward.
And I'll come down on this the same as my concerns were last year. I don't think that I want to put the county in a position where we need to bond for these projects. They're all good projects or worthwhile projects, but I think the ones that we can glean out of this we can finance with the amount of money that we've got in that fund right now. So
yeah, and the only thing I would add to that is I would hate to see this board say there's never a situation where we would be willing to bond for TIF dollars,
right,
as we did with Dakin's Lake,
right,
and the Vetter Road and,
right,
and the trail. There are going to be occasions where it's worth looking. I'm just with you, Paul, when we look at these, none of these rise to the level that it warrants county bonding, in my mind.
Okay. We good on that, Leanne?
Do we need a formal motion to stay with that, or at the end of the day we just come down there?
I think it'll be if you don't exceed the $235,000, it's
okay.
It's going to come down on that.
Yeah.
So now we go to yes and no's, but no dollars attached to projects. Is that the way you're seeing this?
I think that's probably the clearest way to go.
Okay.
I'll just help you out. Collins has three projects. The first one for the building on Main Street has been determined to be ineligible, and at the same point, the applicant has withdrawn it, too.
Okay.
The second one is the upgrade on the water lines associated with the regrading of U.S. Highway 65. And then the third project is storm sewer upgrades within the community. So actually two separate projects for the city of Collins.
Yeah, and so I come down, for me personally, I'm in support of the water lines. I think it's comparable to what we did in McCallsburg last year, and so I'm in favor of that one. I am not in favor of the storm sewer upgrades. I think it's a great project, but I think that is, for me, more closely tied to roads. And we've said no in the past to roads, so I come down as a no on that one. So with that, I would move approval of the second project, work on the water lines.
I would second that motion, and I'd like to comment, if possible. First of all, I want to appreciate the correspondence back and forth between Leanne and Brett Comerges and so forth, and explanations that he brought forth. So I think he was well aware of last week's discussion and some of the previous discussions. But I do think that being consistent with past practice and the fact that we may be wanting to take a look at where the drainage trustees would come down with the storm sewer upgrades and so forth, this one would be the most appropriate one. And so I would concur that that should be the only one that we would want to consider at a later time as to what the funding amount would be.
I think, like we discussed here last week, the question of the storm sewers, I think, needs to go through the drainage district first and, mm-hmm. and find out where we're at with that. So I would I would agree with the $40,000 for the water. So we've got a motion and a second to approve the project for the water lines in Collins. Is there anything further?
Okay.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That project had been approved. Next is the playground equipment, phase two. It's from the Colo Nesco School District, but the playground is actually in Zering, and we did fund
phase one last year.
That phase had actually been completed by the time they came to this board. This phase has not been completed, I don't believe, as of yet. Is that correct?
Yeah.
And I'm in support of this one, and I'll move approval.
Yeah, I will second that. Well, I was going to beat you.
I'll let you.
No, agreed. Not only is it the location, but it's, again, would totally enhance the entire Dickens Lake redevelopment that's taking place there, and I think it will serve the community well.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second to approve the request from Colo Nesco. Anything further?
We're doing all amounts later.
We're going to do the amounts later.
Mm-hmm. We're going to keep you guessing, Shelley.
Okay.
Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That project has been approved. Hard surface 1 mile of the Heart of Iowa Trail from Highway 69 to Trail Ridge Park in the city of Huxley.
Okay. Again, I would move that we place this for consideration. It's, again, ties in with something that the Conservation Board and our commitment to enhancing trails and recreational sources is certainly there. And we'll come back to a discussion a little later in terms of the amount. But I did see this as a project that I felt that I could support.
Yeah, I agree. I second it. I like that there's a lot of REAP funding there. I'm appreciative that Conservation has been in full support of this one.
We have a motion and a second to approve the project to hard surface the trail in Huxley. Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Next is the City of Kelly, construction of a new 6-inch water main on Hubble Street.
Yeah, I view this one similar to McCallsburg from last year, and move approval.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further on this one?
Just to ask again, Leanne, the note said this change is depending on the estimate. Do we have there been any additional information regarding whether this is going to be a lower figure or higher figure to date?
No, we've received nothing else.
Okay, so what we would be looking at whatever dollar amount we would commit, they would know that this is what the county would be willing to stand behind. Okay, and then they could go from there. Okay, thank you.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second to approve the project in Kelly. Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That project has been approved. Next is the installation of curb and gutter along Trotter Boulevard in Maxwell, and this, to me, is a little bit different than a street installation or improvement. This is actually the location of Story County's Freedom Rock. The rock will be painted, I think, next year. Currently, there's no curb or gutter on this street, and there's no good place to park. The city's done quite a bit of work already to have a an area to honor the veterans. I think that bricks can be purchased, paver bricks can be purchased with the veteran's name on it for this area. So I view this just a little bit different than regular street
improvement. I would move inclusion.
Yeah, I'll say I agree with you, Paul. I'll second Wayne's motion, and this is park development, and I like it.
Got a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That project was approved. Next, the Clock Tower Center from the City of Nevada.
I was trying to figure out if I could get naming rights, but I couldn't quite come up with it.
All you and Edna have to do is write a check, and I'll move approval.
I move approval of the project.
I stepped in on you. I'll second.
We've got a motion and a second to approve this project. This is a area that would be on the west side of City Hall. It's currently a vacant lot, and they've worked with their leadership, Nevada Glass, mm-hmm. to come up with a design for this this area. So it would be more than just a clock tower. It would be the actually a town square. Or
town square.
Again, it's public space. I'm excited about the opportunity for the county to participate. This is the county seat. City of Nevada is doing a great job with that entire area around City Hall, and I look forward to this project being completed.
Mm-hmm. So we have a motion and a second. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That one's been approved. City of Slater, they've revised their plan a little bit. and I think it's just down to some...
In front of City Hall.
Some pavers in front of City Hall and improve that area. So.
And that was down to...
$26,000 is the request now.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I would move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That one's been approved. Story City, construction of Rich Olive Street. This is a street that is in a industrial park. The city's going to put up a spec building, and they're requesting some assistance in paving the street that's going to go to the building.
Yeah, and I've got two issues here.
Yeah.
First of all, streets, and we've come down consistently on that we're not doing streets through TIF. I think this is a really worthy project. I think Story City's doing a great job. But my second issue here is this is already being primarily funded using TIF dollars. Story City does a nice job with their TIF program, but I got a real problem doubling up our TIF ask for a project like this. I am not in support of this one.
I'm going to second that motion, and I think a week ago or maybe 2 weeks ago when we first started talking about this, again, I recognized it was economic development. I think they placed played a good argument before us in terms of the spec building and what it could do towards the economic development for that entire community. But when we went back and I heard you reiterate the role of TIF and how we've used it in the past, I think staying consistent with that philosophy swayed me to say no on this project this time, and then as we move forward, look for alternate ways if the county could find a way to contribute in future development in this particular area.
So I don't know that we need to take action on this one. Were you making a motion?
I wasn't making a motion. I was just stating that okay. I was not in favor of this one.
Okay. So you didn't actually have anything to second, Wayne. So if anybody is...
Right.
I'm just going to ask if anybody would be in favor of this project to make a motion. And not hearing any, we'll move to the last project from the City of Zering, building renovations on Main Street. I think Zering's done an outstanding job. I think they were ready for some improvements, and when the project came around with Dakin's Lake, I think the entire community got behind it. They raised how much money to put bigger fish in the lake, Mike? $20,000 to buy more mature fish so they could fish sooner. So the people in Zering have really come together. I lived in Zering for a year. I've said that before, and where Zering is at today as it, compared to what it was 35 years ago is a complete difference. I'm completely behind this project and the efforts from the people in Zering.
I couldn't agree more. I move that we support this project. I will just point out that the people of Zering and the City Council of Zering are doing a great job, as Paul noted, but the trigger for all of it was this board supporting Dakin's Lake.
Right.
And then the micro projects we've been able to do up there, and anybody who goes to Zering today and compares to where it was 4 years ago, there's a huge difference in Zering, and that's exactly what this program is supposed to be doing.
Second the motion.
We have a motion and a second in support of the project in Zering. Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. That project's been approved. So.
Now the fun starts.
Well, as I look at our numbers, we're 20% over. If we've got to get to 235, if that's the maximum that we've set, if we funded every one of these projects at their requested amount, we're about 20% over.
Right.
And so what I did is I went through and I took 80% of each request, rounded, so it's not quite 80% for every request. And coincidentally enough, amazing the way these things work, I come up at $235,000 in funding. It's amazing how that worked out. If you want me to go through them, I'll go through them.
I'd like to have you go through them because I found it very, it was challenging for me to agree at an actual percentage point. So I played with several different scenarios, and then I went back, and then I kind of...
Well, Wayne, let me tell you where I am, and then we can have the conversation.
Okay.
So Collins requested $40,000. I've got them at $32,000. Colonesco requested $17,500. I've got them at $14,000. Huxley requested $16,233. I've got them at $13,000. Kelly requested $56,650. I've got them at $45,000. Maxwell requested $38,000. I've got them at $30,000. Nevada requested $70,000. I've got them at $56,000. Slater requested $26,250. I've got them at $21,000. And Zering requested $31,009, and I've got them at $24,000. And if somebody will check my math, I believe that comes up to $235,000.
I'm going to take your word for it. Wayne's got the big calculator, though.
Yeah, well, it's here. Just for the record, I'd like to at least say that I didn't use the straight percentage, but we were somewhat similar. I did try to go in through each and then come up with a figure, but as I told you, I ended up with almost $17,000 over that amount, which I knew I was going to have to go back and change. For example, in the very first one where you came up with 32, I had 35. And where you had 14 for Colonesco, I ended up with 16. And where you had 15 or 13 for Huxley, I was at 15. And Kelly, you and I agreed at 45. And for Maxwell, I ended up with 34 and you had 30. And for Nevada, you had 56 and I had 55. And Slater, yours was 21 and mine was 24. And Zering, you had 24 and I had 28. So we weren't too far off, but I recognized even there the hard decision was going to be, do you just take a straight percentage across the board, or do you try to look at each community in terms of, are there other resources that might be at their disposal that could help them move this project forward? And that was so subjective, I could not really put a pinpoint it, so it was more or less a feel-good type of analysis. And you can always get yourself in trouble by using emotion rather than using some systematic logic behind it. And
well,
so
and for,
that's
for
why
me, Wayne,
I feel that your proposal of the 20 is a more realistic proposal than the way I went about it.
Yeah, well, and like I say, it's not a hard and fast 20 simply because I rounded it to make everything an even number. But I believe it is a substantial enough a piece of the funding from what they requested that all of these projects remain viable unless they lose some other funding sources
right.
that they expected. I don't think we're approving anything here that they look at what we approved and say, oh, well, now we can't do the project because you just approved it there.
Right.
So I feel really, really comfortable with this. I'm very willing. If you guys have a better suggestion for a way to get there, I'd love to talk it through. This just, to me, made the most sense. I think it is equitable project by project, and I think it does keep each project viable. Leanne, I'd look at you and ask, what you think. You've been working most closely with all of these communities on the projects. Do you think we're close to where we need to be?
I do. I agree with the numbers. What I did, I approached it in a similar manner to Rick, but I also looked at what the contributions the communities were proposing and whether they were grant-funded and so forth, and seeing if those grants did not come through as anticipated, would it, as a state, remain viable? And I think in each case it is such. With these proposed amounts,
I think the straight percentage method makes the most sense. That, for me, it does. That way, I'm not putting any more value on one project over the other.
Oh, but that's what supervisors do. Just kidding.
We did that through the approval process.
I think, I think it's the fairest way to go about it. So,
yeah.
So, do we need a motion to fund these at a certain percentage, or what? I guess.
Yeah, I would move that we accept the percentage that Supervisor Sanders laid out, the equitable distribution at 20% for each requested amount.
Yeah, and Wayne, could I just ask, since it's not an exact 20%, can we do this at the amounts that are laid out?
Oh, yes.
I'll be glad to read those through.
Right.
We can go through them one at a time, however.
Yeah, I think we ought to restate the amount just for the record because
How about if we do it like this? Yeah. I move that we fund the approved Collins project at $32,000.
Okay.
We fund Colonesco at $14,000. We fund the Heart of Iowa Trail through Huxley at $13,000. We fund the Kelly Water Line at $45,000. We fund the Freedom Rock in Maxwell at $30,000. We fund the Clock Tower Center in Nevada at $56,000. We fund the pavers in front of City Hall in Slater at $21,000, and we fund the building renovations on Main Street in Zeering at $24,000.
I would second the motion.
We have a motion and a second to fund the projects as stated by Mr. Sanders. Is there anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Those projects have been approved for a total amount of $235,000.
Leanne, thank you. Great job, Leanne, Running us through this process.
I will draft a letter from the for signature of the chair. A letter for each of these.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Okay. Very good.
Next, consideration of recommended proposal for the tower replacement project and direction to proceed with contract development. Leanne Harder and Cal Pearson.
Cal's making his way up. I'm going to let my presence be very brief here because I'm just the kind of the coordinator game that's going. Cal does have numbers in.
Leanne, is it on?
It's not.
Then you have to repeat that verbatim.
What I said. And Cal is here. What we are going to present, Jamie Downey with Shive Hattery is here as well, and he'll probably take my seat. We did receive one proposal, as the board knows, received last week. There's a recommendation that was put in your packet, and then Cal does have some budget implications to discuss with you. But while I'm here, I'll answer any questions I can if you have any of me.
I don't.
Okay. Yep. Good morning.
Welcome back.
With me today is Jamie Downing from Shive Hattery. He's been working with us on this project. As you have received, we've gotten two responses to our RFP One bid was rejected. There was some issues, so we ended up with one bid that was acceptable, and we have a letter of recommendation from Shive Hattery to go with this bid for the tower replacement. There are some number issues that I'd like to bring up on this. First of all, I appropriated $85,000 from last year's budget to the current budget for this project. We're coming in at a bid of $92,596 for the
actual. Read that again, please.
$92,596 for the actual tower project. I also have architectural funding fees of $24,078 for the project, which comes up with a total of $116,674.00, which leaves me with a minus $31,674 that if I cannot find a way to absorb that in any areas of my budget through the year, that would be the maximum number I would have to amend for this project at the end of the year.
Yeah. So much for a simple project to replace a tower. But we don't have any choice. I mean, you've been nervous since they inspected it a year ago.
Yes. So I was appreciative that we got one bid that was acceptable. It was high, but I think it's in the ballpark of what we want to accomplish here.
And this is to replace the equipment, antenna equipment, that's on the tower.
This is for the tower.
The tower.
Structure, okay.
Structure itself.
All right.
Which has been the main concern is the tower structures.
Okay.
We have two down.
So we're going from two to one.
Mm-hmm. Well, based on what you shared with us and the fact that we rejected the first one, we've gone through looking at the second and still realizing that we had budgeted a substantial portion of it, but we're somewhat short. I think that it is a project that we need to go ahead and move forward with, and ask you again to continue to work with the board as we move forward. And if we need a budget amendment at a later time to do so, you know, you can certainly bring that to us. But I would move that we accept this proposal as recommended and move forward.
Yeah, and I'll second, but Cal, I'd like you to talk a little bit more about the bid that was rejected and what you can share with us on the concerns there.
Okay, if you don't mind, I'd like to turn that over to Jamie. He has the details of what went on there.
Okay. Well, first of all, we followed all the proper protocol. It was, put out to bid per requirements, following AIA requirements and documents and the RFP. The one bid that we rejected was received late. It was received about 2.5 hours past the due date and time, and it was not properly put on the AIA bid forms. There were no it was on their own personal documents. So, mm-hmm. And there was a few items within the bid that were not inclusive. Had they been at the pre-bid meeting or raised questions prior to submitting their bid, those items wouldn't have been included in the actual bid itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second to accept the recommendation of the bid from Shive Hattery to award the contract to Sabre Corporation. Is there anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. Thank you, both.
Thank you.
So this is where we move our number 5, is that correct, off the consent agenda.
No, we have four here, the red shirt.
Oh, all right. I've drawn on my agenda too much today. Consideration of proclamation establishing the Red Shirt Friday campaign for Story County, Iowa, Brett McLean and Leanne Harder. Minus Brett.
This was brought to you last week as a potential idea for Story County to implement. The draft proclamation just does encourage employees in Story County to wear red on Fridays starting on November 7th. And what if the board does pass a proclamation today, and if you would so desire, I can email department heads and elected officials to get a count of how many employees may want to purchase a T-shirt, and we could work on getting quotes, but they would be responsible for the cost of those T-shirts. But I know Brett has worked hard and has a design drawn up, working with someone that has done past items for the Freedom Flight. So at least to follow up on that, that'd be beneficial, but in no way would Story County be involved in the purchase of those T-shirts.
Okay. I'll read the proclamation, then I'll leave it to the board. Story County Board of Supervisors, Red Shirt Fridays proclamation, whereas Red Shirt Fridays is a campaign encouraging Americans to wear red each Friday as a show of support to our troops, and whereas the origin of Red Shirt Fridays was initiated sometime in 2005 in the United States and has spread to Canada as well, and whereas soldiers feel encouragement knowing each week businesses, organizations, and citizens are supporting our men and women in the armed services by wearing red on Fridays, and whereas Red Shirt Fridays is a small way of showing love, support, patronage for the many sacrifices our troops make daily. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Story County Board of Supervisors as follows. Section 1, the Story County Board of Supervisors hereby proclaims Red Shirt Fridays for Story County employees to voluntarily wear red on Fridays to demonstrate support for our troops beginning Friday, November 7th, 2014. Number 2, Story County Board of Supervisors encourages Story County citizens to wear red on Fridays in remembrance and honor of the men and women in the military. And this is in witness whereof for my signature. So,
Mr. Chair, the question that I raised last time was, did we put a sunset in terms of whether this is throughout the entire year? We said that it will start on the 7th. Normally, when we have proclamations or awareness of events, it's usually a month. And so I'm just curious in terms of whether or not we should put some type of a timetable or a restriction from this standpoint. While I think it's honorable, I think it's certainly a worthy cause. I struggle just a little bit with, carrying it throughout. For that matter, way it's stated, that's every Friday from here on, and I'm not sure that that's probably the best position for us to take. But I'd like to see us, designate a particular time, whether it's 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, here through Christmas, the first of the year. I don't know. That's just my thought process.
I guess I look at this as the way it's worded. It's voluntary part of the employee, and I think if the three of us approve this proclamation, all we're doing is recognizing the fact that employees are able, if they would like, to wear a red shirt on Friday. We don't necessarily have a dress code. I mean, there's certain departments in the county that do and offices that have a dress code, but that'll be up to the individual officer or the department. But I don't know that you need a sunset on this. I mean, it's continued support for the men and women in the armed services, and it's voluntary on the part of the employee if they want to wear a red shirt. They're doing so with the full understanding that that's the point of the proclamation. So I don't. For me, I don't know that you need a sunset date on it, but that's.
I've reviewed a couple.
Go ahead.
Well, I've reviewed a couple resolutions or proclamations, and I've not seen a date specific. What I've seen is more open-ended than this, in that it does, in some ways, say a date until every man and woman returns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unfortunate we live in a world where we've got our troops in harm's way.
Okay.
But as long as we do, it's open-ended for them. And clearly, Wayne, this has taken on a little more personal view for me with my daughter's decision in the last week or so. I'm with Paul. We're not mandating that anybody do anything. We're simply suggesting that it's appropriate and we support it. And I tend to like the open-ended, and I'll move approval of the proclamation as read.
I can support it. However, I will second the motion, and then I'll comment.
Yep. We have a motion and a second. Anything further?
I certainly support the clarification and the fact that it is a voluntary position. I also know that, it's a type of a subject that not everybody is going to be, 100% in support of, but that's neither here nor there. But I do think that the way that it's structured and the explanation that you shared, and Rick and Leanne, gives me a higher level of comfort that it's an individual choice. It's just like me wearing Cyclone colors every Friday when there's a home game during the season, or wearing a conservation cap when I'm going around wanting people to pay attention to conservation. But I certainly think that our servicemen and women deserve not only the support of county employees, but from the community at large, for the service and devotion that they've given to our country. So while I raised it as a concern, I can wholeheartedly support the proclamation.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. We've had our discussion. Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That proclamation has been approved. And you guys each need to sign this one.
That means I'll have to order more than one shirt, otherwise I can have to wash it.
I'll bet you've got a red shirt somewhere, Clinton.
No, these are special shirts. It has the information on it. I saw the.
Okay,
design.
We need to take number 5 off the consent, which is the consideration of resolution 1526 approving the final agricultural subdivision plat of the Fincham subdivision located on certain lands under the ownership of Anita Fincham, Trustee Richard Fincham, Trustee, and the Fincham Family Trust, located in Section 15 of Franklin Township. Charlie Diffel. Hello, Charlie.
Good morning. I do appreciate you taking this off the consent agenda. Reason being is that we did receive comment from the City of Ames on this subdivision. As you are aware, with the Ames Urban Fringe Plan, on lands that are under the designation of Agricultural and Farm Service, the City of Ames has waived their formal subdivision review authority in those areas. However, we do allow for them to comment when there are subdivisions still within the city limits, or within the 2-mile limits of Ames. This proposed subdivision, it's an agricultural subdivision, strictly for agricultural purposes based off what our code says. It's going from 4 current parcels down to 3 lots. One of the current parcels does contain a single-family dwelling. That single-family dwelling will be located on proposed lot 1 of this subdivision. The other 2 lots, as noted on the subdivision plat, does say lots 2 and 3 are to be conveyed to adjoiners who will continue to farm in accord with current use. City of Ames did bring up an issue of the possibility of lot 2 and 3 potentially being billable for single family dwellings in the future. Again, while our agricultural subdivision process does state that it is meant to be for agricultural purposes, our code still does allow for land zoned A1 to have a single-family dwelling built on them, mainly if it's bigger than 35 acres, which one of these lots will be. But the other one that could come into effect here is the LISA exception, the Land Evaluation and Site Assessment Score, which in my opinion will undoubtedly be low enough to allow for single-family dwellings to be built on a minimum of 1 acre. However, I will point out that is probably the current case right now, too. So you could potentially right now have 4 single-family dwellings out in this proposed area. This application is reducing that number to 3. The Ames Urban Fringe Plan, as stated by the City of Ames, one of the goals of this designation is to limit non-agricultural residences to homes existing at the time of this plan. Otherwise, subdivisions for the creation of new residential development lots is not supported. Again, that's by the Ames Urban Fringe Plan. That being said, I'm in agreement with the City of Ames here that if there are to be, or if the intention is to have no houses built out here, more than what we have currently, the correct route would be to designate lots 2 and 3 as outlots. Our land development regulations do not allow for us to issue zoning permits on outlots, so that would be one mechanism to help us to not allow single family dwellings to be built on those lots. I haven't had a chance. This letter did come through this morning, so I have not had a chance to talk with the applicant to see if they would be in support of designating these as outlots or not. So if you, if the board would like, I can, I would suggest that we maybe just delay decision on this subdivision plat for 1 week. Let me talk to the applicant, see if we can find some agreement between the City of Ames concern and what their wants are for the subdivision plat. My only comment would be just designating this as outlots obviously does probably affect the value of the land if, you know, they're not going to be buildable for single-family residences. I don't believe that's the intention of the applicant, but I'd like to confirm that before making a decision.
I think it makes perfect sense, being that we got a comment from Ames and we have not had time to go get some further information, for us to direct this back to staff, Charlie in this case, to dig into this a little further and come back to us next week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't think we need to take any action on that. So
yep.
Back next week. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Charlie. Looks like we're down to agency reports. Department of Human Services, Pauline Rutherford and Chris Purvis. Mm-hmm. Morning.
Morning.
Boy, you guys got to sit through just a plethora of information this morning.
Good morning. I know all about Story County now. Good morning.
Hi there.
Morning.
I believe you've received the DHS Des Moines Service Area report to the Story Board of Supervisors. Hmm. As for item number one, we have a new income maintenance supervisor on board in our office, and I'll be bringing her with me to the next meeting that we attend. She'll be coming to talk to you. We continue to fill positions as they vacate to the best of our ability with state approval. So we kind of broke down for you the positions that are in process of being filled and or are vacant. So that's just kind of always a change in progress. For item number two, Chris Purvis, one of our supervisors from the office, will be speaking. Before we get to her, I just want to skip over the DCAT CPPC summary. It kind of speaks for itself. And actually, I believe Mr. Sanders would probably know more about that than I would, because he attends those meetings. Just wanted to let you know that we updated the public assistance piece, which is number four. And when we look at the food assistance and the family investment numbers and how they have gone down, just to kind of reiterate that that reflects the positive growth and job improvement and such for your residents here in the county. They don't have a need so much for these services, so it just shows it's a good sign of improvement for the county. As always, and is typical for all of the counties that we serve, the Medicaid or Title 19 numbers continue to increase, and that's kind of static with everybody else that we're seeing. So overall, no big surprises or changes as far as that piece goes. So just wanted to run that through with you guys, and if you have any questions. If not, then I'll just turn this over to Chris Purvis. She's one of our social work supervisor in the Story County office.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hello.
I'm just going to give a quick update kind of on like my staff allocations and some of the services or types of cases we've been seeing come through lately. Currently, I do have 7 staff under me that are social worker twos, or the direct line social workers to serve families. I am fully staffed. That is fully staffed for us right now. We just actually brought on a new person in August who transferred down to us from Hamilton County area. So that put us at full staff, which made my staff very happy to make their caseloads go down a little bit. Our average caseload right now is around 37 to 40. Without her, our caseloads were pushing in the 50 aspect range. We had a huge influx of cases come in June and July, I believe, but we were back down in August to being a little more average. And September, we've done pretty well. It's been pretty average. I can't think quite how many. I didn't look today to see how many came in September, but it's manageable for my 7 staff to be able to handle. We did have an influx with some methamphetamine and prescription drug cases. Again, we also have an influx with DV cases, physical abuse cases. Our sex abuse cases seem to come in cycles. We're on a downswing again, but probably just a couple months ago, we had a fair amount come in, a good amount come in on those. With our meth cases, we refer our parents to do a substance abuse eval first. And the agencies that we generally use are Children and Family Resources, or also known as CFR, over in Ames, Ierley Ball, and Creative Counseling. We work pretty closely with them. They're not obviously the end-all be-all that we only use, but those are probably the three primary agencies that we do use over there. For our domestic violence cases, we do refer for parents for counseling with Ierley Ball, Central Iowa Psychological Services, also known as CIPS, Creative Counseling, Barclay and Associates are probably the ones that we use the most. We also obviously hook up with Access Center and do a lot of services through them. For sex abuse cases, it's a lot of kind of the same things because it's a lot of the counseling services. So again, we use CFR, Ierley Ball, CIPS, Creative Counseling, Ames Psychological and Counseling Services, and obviously we do tap into some of the YSS programming also. And physical abuse cases, obviously the same. We go through a lot of therapy, anger management type of stuff. If it's a parent that we feel has an anger management issue, we go through those therapy aspects. We also, with our cases, we work very closely with the schools so that we can make sure how the kids are doing in school. They generally can give us a lot of information if the kids are coming in talking about different things. So my staff, one of the first releases of information they get will be to make sure they talk to the schools or the daycare centers the kids attend so we can make sure we have all the information we can have. Are there questions?
Thank you.
I'm good.
Anything else? Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you again for
just something. Just as a piece, we were talking about the filling of the vacancies and how she just got one transferred in. Even though we fill vacancies in Story County, I would say that it's probably been Jennifer Carlson's also one of our social work supervisors. You met her last time that we were here. I'll bet you it's been more than a year, if not even longer than that, that we've been able to publicly fill because people have a desire to come down here to Story County. So it is sort of a choice location for these people, and we have a list of people wanting to come down to this office who are already state employees. So just, again, just a positive note about the county itself.
We agree. We think Story County is a choice location. Thank you.
Garden spot, no doubt about it.
Thank you very much.
But,
thank you.
Let's see, no departmental reports or other reports, liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Pass on the liaison assignments, the fifth week in the month and so forth. I would mention that we had a MICA board meeting last evening, and that the most intriguing part of the meeting, of course, is the challenge that Red Rock Community Action Agency is having. They've reached out to MICA for some assistance in helping to look at their structure and organizational format. They are currently without our executive director. They have an interim person in place right now. Members of our board have met with their board, and we have agreed to maintain ongoing collaboration with them to see if we can help them move forward, because we recognize that if they're not successful, the individuals in that area will be greatly impacted by not being able to access a lot of the services. Right now, we're waiting until October 4th or somewhere there. The Polk County is on the agenda to make some determinations, because the service of Red Rock is all of the areas around Polk County, and Polk County has contractual agreements with Red Rock. So depending upon what they decide to do, will determine what role MICA may be playing in giving some assistance. So all in all, other than that, it was just a normal meeting approving contracts, and we're pleased that we were able to get the Head Start program back up and running here in Nevada, and things are going quite well.
Mm-hmm. liaison assignment, my relationship with our county engineer, Darren Moon. I had conversations with him last week on the Hickory Grove Bridge. Now that we know that FEMA funding is not going to be forthcoming there, right now we have Hickory Grove on our calendar to replace. I think we need to get to the bottom of that in as timely a fashion as we can. And related to that, we need to make some kind of determination. There's a stop sign right there. I think it's 250th and 670th on 670th where you're going north. And have had an ongoing concern about that stop sign now on the road north-south when our road east-west really doesn't go anywhere. I think those two are tied together, but I think it's important that we work through and make some kind of determination of what's happening in that whole area. I know, Paul, you've been talking to the Hertz family and what's going on there. I think it's time for us to go ahead and push through the conversation now that we know it's local funding to replace that bridge, and depending on where we go with the bridge and what kind of timing's there, what we're doing with that intersection, what makes the most sense.
Right.
So I wanted to bring that to you guys. Hopefully it's going to be on our agenda for next week to have a full conversation about it, and just wanted to update you on that.
Okay.
Okay.
And I'll pass. Public forum number two. Comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. I don't see anybody moving towards the mic. Announcements from the supervisor, Wayne.
No, just CoStar, our technology group, will be meeting this Thursday. We will be looking at the Excellent Action Awards that has been submitted. As you are aware, the Story County is being considered for that and a couple other things, but we're moving along quite well from a standpoint of outreach to member counties in terms of helping to assess their technology needs and giving future direction through a specialized group of IT professionals that are doing audits for smaller counties that have a little or no IT presence. So we're very pleased with the direction that that entity is moving with the support of the ISAC Board of Directors.
I've got a meeting tomorrow scheduled with Liz Beck, Director of Heartland, and our former colleague, Jane Halliburton, who's now she's the president of the board of Heartland. I believe that the topic of conversation, Wayne, is HRDA. I know you've met with the two of them, I believe, about HRDA. And so I just want to keep you guys up to date. Paul, I would expect you'll be getting a call to go meet with them. I assume they're working their way through us to have this conversation, and I'll report back where that conversation goes. Just wanted to keep you up to date.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll pass.
Okay.
So I'll take a motion for adjournment.
So move.
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.